So we are at, today is the 26th of December 2018. Chai Teves, Tavshin Ayin Tes. And we are Meforshim Day of the beginning of Parsha Shlach, Perek Yud Gimel. But Rashi Day only got us about two-thirds of the way through the parak. So this is my plan is. There's really, it's not of those Rashi that we spent a lot of time on, there's really only the beginning. I want to show a couple things in the Rishonim, and then we'll do Chumash and Rashi, and Rishonim for the end. I think we could fit it all in, especially once I got a few extra minutes, once I'm going before Rabbi Greenspan instead of after. So let's go straight from the beginning, and let's go. So part of the reason that we didn't get through the whole parak is because we got into a discussion that Rashi seems to imply, although Rashi never really says it outright. Chapter 13, 1, Bamidbar. Yes.
You're starting from the beginning?
Yes. I just gave the whole introduction, Bruce. Yeah, come on.
I thought you were going to start from where we left off.
All right. So Rashi never says it outright. There's two Rashis on the first pasuk. But our implication, generally the feeling we get from Rashi, is that the sin of the Meraglim started by sending Meraglim in the first place. By sending spies in the first place, that shouldn't have been done. And Rashi is invoking that from the first parak of Devarim, where you came to me, and Hashem is sort of saying, Shlach, like, send the ones that you want to send. I mean, I don't want anything to do with it. Implying this is a bad idea. So that's Rashi's pshat, and I think that probably traditionally that's what we think about. Yeah.
Was it a problem in Sefer Yeshua to send?
No.
No, it wasn't.
Well, so suddenly you got to come to the Yeshua Shirim to figure out why Yeshua is not so bad. Or maybe we should include a Haftorah segment to the Shirim here, because I think that is the Haftorah for Parsha Shlach. But Yeshua is not criticized for doing it. But anyways, so that's Rashi's explanation. So you take a look at the Ramban here. So the Ramban is somewhat lengthy, but the Ramban raises questions on that, saying, what's so bad about sending these spies? He quotes Rashi and then says, but we can ask, Imke Moshe Atzmo, if so, then Moshe himself sinned. Because the people, it says, the pasuk there in Devarim says, Vaitavine Devar. Moshe says, you came to me asking to send spies, and I thought it was a good idea. And also, why would Moshe ask those questions if he didn't really want to know? Right? He said, find out if the land is good or bad. Maybe Moshe wanted to find out if the land was good or bad. And also, he asks a whole litany of questions here, but why do they get upset when the people come back saying that the people are very strong, etc.? Did Moshe want them to lie about it? So Rabban builds along those lines. So he says, "Aval yishva inyan bezek, ki Yisrael amru kederach kol abayim lachim ba'aretz nachru yasha, shochel lifneichem anashim l'dais adarachim uvoa arad." That people came with a pretty reasonable request to find out what the order was, etc. So therefore Moshe wanted to find out, and Moshe said, yeah, that is a good idea. So he turns to Hashem, and Moshe says, I want to send a couple of spies. To which Hashem says, the only direction that Hashem gives is, I want to send 12 of them, one from each tribe. That wasn't part of Moshe's request. I mean, Moshe comes and says, we should send spies. Hashem's response is, yeah, do according to this, do this. Why would Hashem make that request? Because Hashem knows that this isn't going to end well. Hashem knows that this isn't going to end well, and therefore he wants the blame evenly spread amongst all the Jewish people. That was the adjustment, so to speak, that Hashem makes with regards to the request of Moshe. But that is the... And that's where the Ramban really ends. It's a very long Ramban, but the Ramban doesn't really go any further than that by saying, but other than saying, yeah, that is the... That Moshe came with this request. Hashem says, fine, but do it in this particular way. And that's what happens. Now there is an idea of lack of emunah. That's told later on. Neman kana inyan bistam ki chin haya, aval mishra tori hiskir lehem Moshe kol var mitchilas, and lahagil lehem pisha'am, Now the people. Now he goes on to say that the people might have sinned by not having enough emunah in the first place, but that's Devarim issues, not Bamidbar issues, right? Remember we discussed or pointed out in the first time we went through this that the story is told with several different issues in the beginning of Devarim versus Bamidbar, and why is it that it's told different ways in different places? So Rabban says, yes, it's true. If Hashem didn't tell him to send spies, the people should have trusted that that the same cloud that's taking us along is going to take us to Eretz Yisrael and is going to be successful. That is true, but that's not actually part of our discussion here. Part of our discussion here is that the people had a decent request. They and the spies went and fulfilled it. And what was the sin? So the Ramban doesn't really tell you at this point. At this point, the Ramban doesn't reveal what the problem is because there was no problem yet. Hashem says, send spies. People want to send spies. The reasonable request, send spies. But Dvarim, you learn about how maybe it wasn't a reasonable request. But at this point, we go with the assumption that it was. That's the attitude the Ramban seems to be giving. It also seems to be the attitude that the Sforno seems to be giving. That Al Taniach Shishkam Heim, Kamosh Amr Lasos Bamram, Nishcha Anashim Lefaneinu, Shem Yishlechu Had Yotus Bilti Makirim Shevach Aris Vizper Gnosa. That the Sforno picks up on that Hashem adjusted to saying, send the tzaddikim, send the righteous people. Why? In order to avoid the problem that we discussed the other day with the first Rashi. That, right, the first Rashi on the Chumash was, why is it that the Meraglim are close to the Parsha of Miriam? Because Miriam got punished for her bad speech, so through these Rishayim should have gotten Musar from that. So we asked the question, well, what exactly is the connection? Miriam spoke about a person, these people are speaking about a land, to which we answered from Rabbi Banchek in the What's Bothering Rashi book, that the sin of Miriam was that she didn't look deeply at the matter. She just took what she saw at face value and expressed that. So too the spies are being warned, or the challenge of the spies is, don't just take what you see at face value. So Sforno says that's exactly why he didn't take the regular Navy SEALs. That's exactly why he didn't take the regular CIA agents to send them into the land of Israel, or the Mossad agents to send them into the land of Israel. Rather, he took these righteous people because they need to be able to see past what they're going to see. Right? Shema Yishlechu Hedyotos Bilti Makirim Shevach Haaretz V'Yisperu Begnusa. That you're going to send these Hedyotos. They're not going to recognize the greatness of the land, and they're going to share its Gnus. They're going to share how it's not such a good land. So he sent these righteous people. Now, were they successful? Was that challenge solved? So Sforno says, yes, they actually did correctly. Right? They came back and gave a good report about the land, which was mission accomplished with regards to that part. However, he says, Elisha Amrushi, however, the problem was that they said that they weren't going to be able to conquer it. That was the problem. But in terms of the Moshe's request of find out if the land is good, and Hashem adding, you better send smart people because you need to be smart in order to figure out how the land is good. So with regards to that, it was mission accomplished. You want to say something?
No, I definitely answered.
Okay. So what else? And then at the end of this Sforno, he says, right. And then he adds in one other question, which is a little bit odd that it's here. If I was this Sforno, I would have put this a parak later. But this Sforno asks, why is it that Bnei Yisrael didn't get kapara? I mean, why is it that they sinned? So they thought they were going to be able to conquer it. I mean, Israel sinned in that they also thought they weren't going to be able to conquer it. So that being the case, why were they not? But then they were upset about it, right? V'is palu, it says v'tashuva tifkal ifnei Hashem. They did shuva and they cried in front of Hashem. In fact, the very first psukim of shuva that we say on Yom Kippur, right? It's part of the Kol Nidre, right? You say Kol Nidre, and then you say a couple of psukim that are mentioned there. That's actually from Parsha Shlach. That's Bnei Yisrael's tshuva over the sin of the spies that we quote at that point in our liturgy. So why? But it was unsuccessful tshuva. So why was it unsuccessful? So the Sforno gives two answers. Number one is because it was a Chil Hashem. Right? The fact that they didn't accept it itself was a Chil Hashem, and Chil Hashem is only mechaper by Nisa. That's why they had to all die out. And second of all, because this is already a pattern. They already sinned by the Chet Egel. So one time we'll allow the tshuva to work. The second time, we're not going to allow it to work, even though we could debate whether the Chet Egel, the tshuva from there, did work or didn't work, etc. But those are the two answers that the Sforno gives. Okay? So that all is on the first pasuk, or the premise of the entire parsha. There is a little bit of a discussion that I don't want to get too far into, the issue of Yehoshua's name, right? The Ramban himself, I think, basically. Ramban. No, But there is a change of Yeshua's name. So the Sforno makes a couple. Why do you change the name? So Rashi famously says that may you be saved from the Eitzah of the Meragim, the advice of the Meragim. So the other Rishonim point out that that's very interesting. However, Yeshua's name has been changed for several books already. That Yeshua's name is actually in the last parak is Yeshua comes up. Yeshua is the one who goes to, who brings the story of Eldad and Medad to Moshe, and his name there is Yehoshua. And in Shmos, his name is Yehoshua also. In fact, I'm not even sure he's referred to as Hoshea at all over the course of the Torah, other than in this whole section here. So what's going on there with regards to that? So the Sforno says, Amar Shaya Noda Bishifto Li Ishchayel B'Shem Hoshea, that amongst his Shevet he was known as Hoshea. So us talking him as a national level, we just know him by his formal name, Yehoshua. But he was always named as Hoshea in his amongst his people. So Moshe gave him the name Yehoshua, it was an honorable thing. And also to daven for him now. Meaning it sounds like Yehoshua, he was known as Yehoshua to Moshe, plus it was like an honorific title. And at this point, when he's going on, so Moshe like gives him a bracha and says, you know, I was only calling Yehoshua in the past because of the kavod, but recognize now that there's also a tefillah aspect to it as well. That's the way this Sforno, in terms of like a dual understanding to it's his name being Yehoshua.
So it wasn't changed because he didn't
talk. That he was known as Yehoshua beforehand. Yeah, that's what the Sforno was saying.
So it wasn't changed because of that.
Well, the Sforno was saying, though, that he did get an extra bracha because of this.
Oh, he get it. So why did who was the other? Taylor. Why did he get an extra?
Yeah, so I think the...
He went to Rachel.
But Moshe didn't know that beforehand. It's not just Kalev. Why not the other 10 tribes also? So I think what the Sforno would say... I mean, my shot in this is that if you look in the Gemara that Rashi is quoting, this I said this over at Yehoshua's Bris when he was born. Yehoshua was part... was named for this Yehoshua. I think we found the Yehoshua in the family, but he was born Parsha Shlach. Hence his bar mitzvah is Parsha Shlach, okay? So, coincidentally, of course. So the Gemara there, when that Rashi is quoting from, isn't discussing it in the context of the Meraglim. Is discussing, I didn't prepare this for today, I figured we'd save it for later, but the Gemara itself takes it out of the context of the Meraglim. It says that Hashem, that Yehoshua got this bracha because he was a Talmud of Moshe, that he was a close Talmud of Moshe. And Hashem was saying to him, Hashem should save you, not me, it's not a Meraglim, again, you can look up the Gemara, but that you should be saved from anything that you come across over the course of your life. I don't know what the challenges are that you're going to face, but whatever it is, whatever they are, Hashem should help you in the future. So yes, it's true that Hashem, that Moshe gave him that bracha, but it wasn't necessarily with regards to this. Now it ended up, in retrospect, ended up being about this. This was the challenge that he faced, but it wasn't necessarily, you don't have to string it to that if you look at the Gemara. You don't have to read the Gemara that way.
Is there any commentary, what, these two were saved as compared to the other 10?
Well, you would say that Yehoshua got saved because of this, because of the bracha. Right. But again, it wasn't Moshe's bracha about this. It was Moshe's general bracha. I think that's how you would read that. I mean, besides, Yehoshua is clearly, I mean, Yehoshua was Moshe's prime Talmud. He was already his prime Talmud, as we see in the last parak. So that's it. Now, Kalev, I'm not sure we know what we know about Kalev. Kalev is from the... Kalev is from Yehuda, right. So Yehuda already, as we spoke about last Shabbos, Yehuda already has leadership qualities to him, to it already. So maybe that was also necessary. There, they didn't follow... so he didn't follow that. Okay, so anyways, so the Rashbam also says, also has a comment about this, Lo Atakaro So Kain Shereik Farkodim, right? Same thing, he didn't name him this now, because he's already called us before. Rather, the Rashbam's Pshat is, El Kach Piru Shehoshea Benun Sh'amru Lamala Shenikra Kain Beves Aviv, that he was called that in his family, who? Oso Shekara Moshe, Yehoshua Kishenasa Mishar So Vapkido Al Beso, that Moshe gave Yehoshua that name as a title, similar thing, but interesting, not necessarily as a bracha, as the Sforno says, but as like an honorific, that you now achieve the status, so I'm going to give you a new name to go along with it. What's his proof? This was apparently the minhag at the time. What's the proof? Who else got a new name when he got a new title?
Yosef.
Yes. You see that Paro gave Yosef a title, so Zotu Moshe gives Yehoshua a title, and also Daniel was called Belshazzar, so you got another one to throw in as well. All right.
That's kind of a standalone. It talks about, well, it includes the K Caleb and
yeah.
And then after all of that,
right.
It's called Hoshea.
So I don't know if you have to read it after that. It's like, by the way, Moshe called Hoshea Yehoshua.
But he didn't in the Pasuk, right?
Well, he did in the earlier Pasuk. It says, when I tell you, Ephraim Hoshea ben Nun.
Hoshea.
Right.
But not Yehoshua.
Right, because his the name that he needed for his passport said Hoshea on it.
Right.
But
right.
Moshe called him Yehoshua either as a tefillah, as Rashi says, or as a bracha, as a, or honor / bracha, as the Sforno says, or as a declaration of his authority, as the Rashbam says.
Yeah.
Right? Okay.
Because it's followed by, and he sent them, right?
Yeah. Well, he sent them before. It's actually, these are the names of the people which Moshe sent. And by the way, Hoshea's name was Yehoshua.
And then it says, and he sent them.
Yeah, I guess the next pasukle says he sent them. Yeah, okay. Fine.
So Rashi says that he gave him sort of a bracha, right? Yehoshua, right?
Rashi's pshat is that he gave him a bracha, yeah.
Bracha. Why did he give the others? What's the pshat?
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. I don't think it was necessarily about this. It wasn't that he gave him a bracha, you know, before Yehoshua, before you go, you're hanging out with all these scoundrels, no goodniks, I'm going to give you a bracha, right? That I don't think that was...
You don't think that's Rashi's
Look, I don't know if it's you know, it's that is the simplest explanation about what Rashi says, but then you have a lot of questions. So I think you have to read deeper into Rashi. Okay, so let's continue on a little bit. Yikes! Okay, so they came, they spied, they went up this way, they went up that way. Let's go to Chaf Dalet. There's actually, I'm not exactly sure how to read this. Lamakoma, right, they got these really massive grapes. Where did they get the massive grapes? They got the massive grapes in Nachal Eshkol, right, in the river of the...
Yeah.
The valley of Nachal is river or valley. In Israel, they're often the same things. Right? The valley of the Eshkol, of the what's it called? What's the word I'm looking for? The group, of the bunch, or the bunch of groups. Right? So...
Cluster.
The cluster, thank you. Good. So the Sforno makes a comment that... I think what's bothering Sforno is, why are they naming places? Right? Generally, when spies go through, they're going to use the names that are already given. Right? They don't necessarily put down a sign saying, here is like this other place. So I'll tell you the way I read it. I will add, though, that there is a translation of the Sforno that was written by Rabbi Rafael Pelkovitz, which has footnotes in it as well. So that's Dr. David Pelkovitz. You might know him as the psychologist, David Pelkovitz. So his father was the rabbi of the Weichel. He wrote a translation to the Sforno, which is published, I believe, by Arts Girl. So he translates it a little differently. But the way I'm reading this Sforno is, Tameyu ha-kananim al-sha'osu ha-eshkel etzel b'nei Yisrael shakarsu so ha-yadavar chadash v'nifla. The Kananim were in wonderment of the Jewish people, that the Jewish people were in wonderment about these grapes. Right? The Jews are like, whoa, let's cut this down and like take this home. And the Kananim are like, why are these people walking around with these grapes like that for? Right? You could just go into any Giant or even an Acme, and they have grapes that size. Right? So what's the big deal? Why are they marching? Not only that, ki rabim hayu be'eretz ha'shkolos gedolim kamo. There are a lot of clusters in the land of Canaan like that one. Oh, Yosher men are even bigger than it. Velo hayazen nifla itzal Canaanim yoshvei aretz kal. And it wasn't a wonderment by the Canaanim who were living in the land. V'altamia zu karamakam nachal eshkol. It's because of this wonderment that they called the place Nachal Eshkol. Now, who called it Nachal Eshkol? So I'll tell you, Rabbi Pelkovitz's reading is that the Kananim called it Nachal Eshkol. Not because they were bewildered by the cluster of grapes that you get in the supermarket, but they were bewildered that there were these people that were bewildered by the grapes. So he reads it as then, Lamakamahu, that place they called Nachal Eshkol, I mean the Kananim called it Nachal Eshkol. I thought that's not the case. I thought it meant the spies called it Nachal Eshkol because that's where they found the grapes. Why wasn't it called that way before? You know, why wasn't that just the name on the sign with, you know, the Hebrew, Arabic, and English letters? Why wasn't it just called that before? The answer is because for the Kananim, it wasn't anything unusual. I think that's what the Sforno is saying.
But what does that mean, Nachal Eshkol? They just arbitrarily came up with the word nachaletz.
That's where they found the cluster. They're like, whoa!
But isn't that what the Canaanim called it? If that was the name of the place?
So no. That's the point. That's what's bothering. I mean, why is there a place being named in Perek Yud Gimel of Shach?
But you said that they named it that because that's where it was found.
The spies called it that.
Because that's where it was found.
Yeah.
What would they have called it? Was found in Pennsylvania.
They called it a farm.
Oh, they didn't call it Pennsylvania. It had to be a city.
They called it, you know.
But what was the name of the place?
Farmer Ben's.
No, it must have been a city name.
It was named
Valley Eshkol.
They arrived at Valley Eshkol.
No. But it says Kara. They called it Nachal Eshkol. It's not necessarily a proof of there was a sign there, because otherwise how do you understand Pasuk Chaf Dalet?
I know, that's why
the problem, right?
I'm asking that question. They named the place Nachal Eshkol in the Brooklyn before.
Right. So not every time that the Torah gives us the name of a place is necessarily the name that it was called there. I mean, I think we had this in Bereishis a few times. I think where Yaakov comes to Sukkos, it wasn't called Sukkos yet. It was called Sukkos later on.
Korah is past tense, right? They called.
Yeah, but they called it. Who?
They named it there. The place was called the Valley of Eshkol.
It's confusing. It still needs some explanation as to why we're having such emphasis on this place and why it has to be named twice and two.
That's right. What is Eshkol? He says that's the name of Eshkol means cluster. Eshkol means cluster.
Okay. Yeah.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah. How do you translate it? Why do you?
Shmona Nadlu Eshkol.
Or Nadlu Eshkol.
In a cluster.
Okay. So Eshkol means cluster. Okay, now it makes sense.
Valley of the Cluster.
So that's not what it was called there. They called it Valley of the Cluster. Okay.
Well, that's up for debate on the left side. You guys could fight it out. All right. So, what else do we got? So this is what we got up to on Monday. So now they come back. So pasuk chafei, we'll pick up from here with Chumash and Rashi. Vayashuv mitur aris miketz arba'im yom. So they returned from their spying of the land, from the tour of the land, after 40 days. So Rashi makes the comment here, but isn't four? It was 400 parsos on 400 parsos, and a person can walk 10 parsos in a day, right? Which means that it should have taken longer. So, just walking east to west should have taken them 40 days, and they walked south to north and east to west. So, rather, why are they going so short? Why did it take them so short? Because Rashi says, because it was clear to Hashem that if Hashem knows what's happening here. Right? So, Hashem realizes that they're going to be punished for every day that they're there a year. So, Hashem said, you know what, let me shorten their path so that they're going to be punished less. That's a little bit of an odd, it can raise a lot of questions on that. Number one being, well, why did Hashem punish them a month for a year? and let them actually walk the regular amount. But anyways, that is a famous comment that Rashi makes.
There are other instances where Hashem shortens the distance.
Yes, right. So the problem is Hashem shortens the distance because we want to get to something good. And here, you're not necessarily getting this. You're not really getting to something good. So Rashi has to adjust it to figure out how well it is really for the good, because it's this way they're going to be punished less. Okay, so Vayashuvu mitur aretz miketz arba'im yom. I maybe could add also that the longer they're there, the worse it can get. You know, they could also get involved with the people and stop at more rest stops and all sorts of problems could come up.
They get fraternized with the locals.
Yeah. I want to avoid them locals. So Vayelchu Vayavo El Moshe V'El Aaron. So they came to Moshe and Aaron V'El Kol Adas Bnei Yisrael Midbar Paran Kadesha, and all the people of Bnei Yisrael to the Midbar Paran Kadesha V'Yeshivu Sam Devar Es Kol Ha'idah V'Yerum Es Priyachadash. They answered the questions to the congregation. They showed them the fruit. So Rashi says Vayelchu Vayavo, and this is really a proof that Rashi what was not necessarily so clear in the beginning, but that we said that Rashi the original sin was going in the first place. Says Rashi, "Ma vayelchu lahakish halichasan lebiyasan, ma biyasan beitzara afalichasan beitzara." Yisra. Just as they came back with a bad attitude, so too when they left. Their whole trip was with a bad attitude. They weren't going with a clear, with an open mind. So by Yisra Pru, and they told him, saying, "We've come to the land which you sent us, and it is a land." But Gamz Vaschalavut Vashi Vizet Periyah, which seems to all good. Although Rashi jumps in and says, "Yeah, Kol Davar, they're only doing this in order to get to the lies. Kol Davar Sheker Shein Omrim Bo Ksas Emes Betchilaso Emes Kaim. Any lies that doesn't have a little bit of truth in the beginning, so it's not going to work. You need to give a little bit of truth along with the lies."
So these were lies, what they were saying. Or they actually believe it?
What?
They weren't lying to Meraglin. Were they?
So you're saying, well, what's the big deal? Maybe they were just giving an honest response, right? So the Sifsi Chachamim here actually explains what is driving Rashi to give such a negative view. He says, and that is that they come back and they start being saying, oh, the land is beautiful and it's land flowing with milk and honey, etc. So the Sifsi Chachamim, they didn't have to tell you that. Why? That should be obvious. Why should that be obvious? I should be obvious
that's
that the land.
Said.
Oh, that's your question.
Right.
Right. So I'm asking the group. You also. What?
They have the fruit.
Right. They're coming up with these fruit. Shouldn't that be enough to show that the land is obviously a good land? I understand, but it is a good land. That's really what they want to know. Is it a good land? So they should see it already from that. So why do they have to say it? It must be they have to say it in order to couch the lies that they're about to say in a good with good things before and good things after as well. So here is finally, well, let's do one more pasuk. Efes ki azam, but the land, but the nation is strong. Hayoshi ba'aretz, v'harim b'tzuros g'dolos ma'od, and it's very fortress, fortified. V'gam l'idei ha'anak v'yisham. We also saw the l'idei ha'anak. We also saw the children from Amalek that are sitting there. So the Ramban here finally says, I'll tell you what the sin was. The Ramban says that everything he said was true, and they're answering all the questions that they were told to find out. Says the Ramban, Abal Risham Bemilas Ephes. Their sin was in one word. What was that word? The word Ephes. Ephes ki azam. Right? What does the word Ephes mean?
But.
That's what it's translated there?
Albeit.
Which? What?
Albeit.
Albeit.
How be it.
It's an H.
H-O-B-I-T.
Oh, how be it. Three words. How be it. Epis, but. The Rabban says about Rishon b'milas epes shehi mora al davar epes v'nimne mina adam shehi shar b'shut minyan, because what you're doing with the word epes is to demonstrate that it is an impossibility of what you're asking us to do. Yes, the land is good and it's flowing with milk and honey and it's beautiful, lush shafaris and it's beautiful, but we have no way of getting it. Right? Kalusha, and he gives us a couple of psukim to demonstrate that the term ephes means not just but impot, meaning there are a couple other words you could use for but. Ki, aval. But ephes is that but, the you know, it's out of reach. About Eif Shar Lavo Alayem, why? Ki az amvarim mitzuros gudos ma'od v'gami l'deha nakam yinusham. But it's impossible for us to get because the people are very strong. And they're in fortified cities. Now, remember, in the beginning, that's the Moshe's indication to them, at least Rashi's interpretation. Moshe was trying to tell them: if they're in fortified cities, that means they're not strong, right? So, is there a response that, well, we didn't perceive that? We perceive that, you know, your assumption that if they're in strong cities, they're not strong is incorrect. They actually were strong also, maybe, or maybe they just didn't get it. They didn't get what Moshe was saying.
By the way, does Ephes mean zero in Hebrew? Nothing?
Ephes means zero. Yeah, I don't know if that's modern Hebrew or if it's based on this. I don't know. Yeah. Yes, there is a in one of Malcolm Gladwell books, he talks about security precautions that people take, and he says it always ends up being at the same place. Like, let's say you get medicines, so you make a rule that all medicine has to be in child safe child-safe containers. It says, great, except that people are going to stop putting them on the high shelf and start putting them on the low shelf, right? That even though that it seems to always equal itself out. You can take security precautions, but then you'll end up being less secure in other aspects of that. That thing. You don't have to be, just saying that that's what human nature is. So that perhaps is what Moshe's claim to them was. That if they're in fortified cities, that means that they're probably not so strong. Because that's the way human nature is. And the response, I'm not sure, is either no, they are, right? Or B, they didn't necessarily look too carefully, which is what Rashi's fear was in the first place. Okay, now they continue on. Malik Yoshibar Zenegev, Achiti, and all these people are there. So Pasuk Lamed, Vayahas Kalev Esa'am El Moshe. That Kalev stilled the people towards Moshe. And he said, no, we're going to go, we're going to conquer it because we're able to. Now, that's a little bit, there's a little bit of a, what's the word, where you're sort of, the sentence is going in a different place than what the flow is. It's like a little bit of a non sequitur that Kalev is bringing here. What's Kalev talking about? Right? What what is the El Moshe? So Rashi's pshat is also a famous Rashi that Kalev quieted everybody towards Moshe in order to hear what Moshe would say. Now, how did he do that? So Tzavuah, he shouted and said, "V'chizeh bilvaras alon ben Amram." It was this only what Ben Amram did to us. Ben Amram is a language in a lashon gnus, in a disparaging language to get everybody quiet. So Ashomeya, the people that were listening, Hayasavr Shemola Safar Begnusu, the people listening thought that he was going to say bad things about Moshe. When we talk Shaya Bilibam El Moshe Bishvil Divi Hamaraglim, Shasku Kulam Lishmoa Gnusim, and because they were all in their hearts were against Moshe because of what the Maraglim were telling them, they all got quiet in order to listen to more bad things about Moshe. And he said, Karulan was a Yam, Karulan was a Man, Megizlan was a Slav, he split the sea, he brought down Man, he brought a Slav, etc. And therefore we should be able to go up in order to conquer the land. So that's the part. The part that's missing is, right, he got everybody quiet towards Moshe, and Rashi's filling in the blanks of he got everybody quiet thinking that he'll say bad things about Moshe, he then said good things about Moshe, and therefore let's go and do what Moshe says in order to conquer the land. That's Rashi's explanation based on this medrash. The Sforno actually puts in a different shot. He says, El Moshe, Shiyishmu Mayashiv Moshe, to listen to what Moshe answered. Now, we don't have Moshe's answer here. Where would you go in order to see if Moshe gives them an answer?
Deuteronomy.
So Sforno says, because Moshe gives an answer in the Devarim, you just have to plug it in here. Right? V'lai az amar Moshe mashahayir achar kach v'omro v'amor aleichem lo taritzu v'lo tiru mehem v'kalev chizik dvar v'amro. Now what's Moshe's response? In Devarim, Moshe's response is, don't be afraid, don't be scared of them. And so that's, insert that here, cut and paste from Devarim into here, and then Kalev reinforces that by saying, so no, Moshe said we can go, let's all go. That's his pshat on the pasuk. It's just missing words. You have to go to Devarim in order to figure out, in order to find the words that should be inserted.
So before Lamed,
here in pasuk Lamed,
the beginning part of pasuk Lamed, there would have been those words.
Right. When I taught this in Torah Academy, I made them act it out according to both Bamidbar versus Devarim. Like they had to act out the thing. They first started using iPads. They're all excited using their iPads, so that's what we did. All right. So Vayas Kalev Esa'am El Moshe. That is Pasuk. So Pasuk Lamed Aleph. Vanashim Asher Olui Mo Amru. So the people that went up with him said, "No, Lo Nuchalos Esa'am Ki Chazaku." Then they became clear. I mean, once they saw that there was objections and that they had competition, that Kalev and Yeshua, although we don't see Yeshua, Yeshua is a tzaddik, so no one's going to listen to Yeshua, but Kalev was fighting against us, so then they became stronger in their opposition. Says, no, we can't. Right? Kapi mal, that we can't do it. So Vayotziu, Dibas Ha'aret Asher Taru Asa, they sent out evil reports. Asher Taru Asa, El Bnei Yisrael Leimor, Ha'aret Asher Avarnu Balasur Asa, Eretz Ochel Sushvehi, V'chol Am Asher Rinu Besocha, Anshim Mitas, that the land that we pass through, it consumes its inhabitants, and we saw the people there are people of great measure. Asher Gedolim V'Gavom, they're very tall and very big, very large. The Shamra Inu, and there we saw Esa Nefilim, Bnei Anak Mina Nefilim. We saw the Nefilim. These are the people from Dor Enos, people from Dor Enos, the giants from the past, and we were in their eyes like grasshoppers, v'chein hayin v'enichem, so too were us in their eyes, meaning we saw ourselves as being that size as well, which many darshanim speak about here as being their failure of confidence that they didn't have. So the Sforno comments, it says, even though the people there are very strong, it's not because of the greatness of the land. It's only a survival of the fittest, and those are the people that live. I mean, they stopped talking about the greatness of the land. They just said that, yeah, that it's the people, there's a real Darwinian effort going on there, and only the fittest survive, and therefore the people that are there are extremely large. The Ramban here comments that once there was competition, they had to go and give these types of reports, and they spoke evilly about the land. Right, that there isn't enough to sustain lesser people there, and therefore the implication being that we're not going to be able to be sustained once we get into the land. So that is their response. Now they have the third group of people. You have Moshe, Aaron, and then Kalev and Yeshua. You have the spies, and then the reaction of the people. What's the reaction of the people? So that's the very next pasuk in Pasuk Yudalev. I guess I'll pick up with that next. Yeah.
The whole cloud was there. They gave the report to like.
So not necessarily. No, that actually is a machlokas. The impression that we get from Rashi is that everybody's there, and Kalev gets everybody quiet, and everybody's listening, and this whole thing is going on, and everybody else is watching. The Ramban doesn't seem to read it that way. The Ramban seems this is what the Ramban said. The Ramban says they went in front of Moshe and Aaron originally, and they figured that Moshe and Aaron will accept it, or word will get around. But when there's pushback from Moshe, Aaron, Kalev, and Yehoshua, so then they then went around to the people and started saying bad things about the land, and the people reacted the way that they did. I mean, the original thought was, oh, we'll just give them this, they'll get the report, they'll get the dossier, and they'll listen to everything that it says in the dossier, and we won't have to go and dirty our hands with telling all the people. But when there was pushback, so then they have to dirty their hands and, start.
It almost sounds like the rumors were starting. You're talking about millions of people.
Yeah. Right, and this is how rumors were started. So I think there's different views on that. Rashi's perspective, I think, is that everybody's there. That's sort of the image that you get when you learn this in elementary school. But from the Ramban, it's not necessarily, it's a little more sophisticated than that. Now we're going to go give a report, and then when there was pushback, so then they had to go and spread around and tell their individual tribes that, that things are not good. All right. I'll pick up with more tomorrow.